Hey, Rodney, did you know Slack's been a part of the Ready for as long as I have?
You mean, like, back in the Bryant Park days?
You know it. Even when there were only a couple of us working out of a cafe in Midtown, Slack is where we came together to tackle the future of work. Over 8 years later, we're fully decentralized across 8 time zones, and we still do it all with Slack.
That's right, because it's the AI-powered platform for growing your business, keeping your teams connected, and making work legitimately simpler. Now you can get up to speed on a new project with one-click summaries or find exactly what you need, when you need it, with an AI-supercharged search function.
It makes your day-to-day easier and gives you the freedom to focus on what really matters, your future.
Grow your business without the grind in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Rodney Evans, and that guy who may or may not have makeup on his face is Sam Sperlin.
Just blown up my spot from the very beginning, Rodney. From the very beginning. That's fine.
Can't help it.
You know what? I'm a professional, and I really care about the experience that our listeners / watchers, in this case, have. And now I look amazing.
You look perfect and fantastic. And everyone should wear makeup who wants to, under any circumstances.
That's true.
Anyway, that's not the point of this show. This is At Work with the Ready, which is a podcast. You wouldn't know it from this start, but it's actually a podcast about modernizing organizations as the future of work meets the present moment.
And today is one of our special episodes where we discuss your questions and patterns that you want us to talk about.
Yeah, we're doing an AUA. We did a Future of HR AUA. This is our first At Work with the Ready AUA, though. And AUAs, for longtime listeners, are my favorite kind of episodes to make because I love hearing your questions, and they're always really smart. And this time we got a raft of them, so we're going to do our best to get through a few. But before we do, we're going to check in. Sam, what you got?
Rodney, on the spot, you have to give a 20-minute presentation. No preparation. You just have to hold our attention for 20 minutes and teach us something. What are you doing?
Intro to swimming. I'm going to go sofa to capable in 3 major strokes in 20 minutes on land. I believe that just through streamlined tips and many of my own experiences nearly drowning practicing them, I can do this. And that is what I'm going to teach you in a short presentation.
Right. I'm picturing like a group of 20 of us. We have us like spread out. Are we like moving our arms around and stuff?
It's part. You said I had to keep your attention. So it's going to be participatory in nature. Space and abilities permitting, we will be practicing some things with our arms and legs.
And I guess if we just happened to be at a pool, your talk just got even more effective. But
I mean, everybody
pool in. Not required.
It's going to slap either way. What about you?
Okay. Should I keep with the sporty theme? We're so sporty.
So sporty.
I like sports. I like hockey. And I was a hockey coach for a little while, some like high school and actually some college club. And I like all sorts of fun theoretical stuff about hockey strategy. So I think I'd do a tight 20 on the intricacies of the various power play strategies that one could employ depending on what your opponent is doing. We'll either play that high umbrella or we'll play that low umbrella or we'll play the overload. Sure. And it all kind of depends on, you know, what your team is good at, what your opponent is doing. And I'd really walk us through the basics, and we would all leave that session really understanding what sort of power play we would run with our team.
Okay. That sounds actually pretty fun, considering I don't care at all about hockey. Anyway,
I'm so checked in.
We're uber checked in, and if you all have not left us a review on Apple Podcasts, please do it. I just learned a lot about metrics this week. It's wild out there. A bunch of changes have been made that mean metrics are worse. So do us a solid and help us claw back our once very favorable metrics.
Yeah. Make it so that I don't feel like it's my fault. That's what
Yeah,
we're
make
really
it that way.
Here.
You guys let Sam sleep. Yeah. Let him live. Let him sleep.
That's right. All right, Rodney, we're going to channel that Friday afternoon energy. I'm taking next week off, so I'm bringing even more kind of last day of school vibes to this, which is a perfect time to do some AUA questions, which I don't know if we've actually said. AUA means ask us anything.
Oh, yeah.
You probably figured it out because you're smart.
Yeah.
So you all have been absolutely crushing our inbox with great questions. Rodney went in, dipped into that inbox, grabbed a few of her favorite questions, and we're going to get through as many as we can in as reasonable amount of time as we can. So are you ready to kick us off with the first question?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's do it.
So first question is, how do you give critical feedback to systemic flaws without being seen as a threat to those who built the system? How are you balancing setting a higher bar for the organization without insulting the work that has been done to date, even if it's flawed? Sam, why don't you kick us off?
First place my brain goes to is that what is perceived as a flawed system or organizational debt probably did not start that way. And I have seen a lot of value in really trying to understand the historical context around why things are the way they are. Usually org debt started, well, what has become org debt started as a really smart or good, or at least reasonable approach to doing a thing. And over time, that context has changed, even while the system has maybe not. So there's a major mismatch there. So to the extent that there are folks still around who remember the original context that they were designing for, I think it's really important in your role as a change agent or as a critiquer of that system to do the work to understand like why it is the way it is right now. And that'll help, I think, give you better approaches to talking about changing it and just build credibility in the eyes of the folks who were there from the beginning and built the thing.
Yeah, I really like that. I think the only bits I would add are, I know that when I've been relatively new to an organization, or I guess even if I've been tenured, articulating things that I have seen work elsewhere often gives more credibility than just being like, here's my opinion. I think it's very easy to get into something that feels symmetrical when it's like, here's the thing that exists now and here's the thing that I think should exist instead. It's very easy to just like argue at that altitude. And I think, you know, whether it's true or whether you're fibbing a little bit, to say like, well, here's the thing that worked really well for my team at another organization, or like, I steal stuff from clients all the time and bring them to the ready. Yeah. And I'll be like, you know, here's a thing that our client does that I think is really smart. And not that I couldn't get it done otherwise, but I think it lends some weight to the argument when it doesn't just feel like it's an idea, when it feels like it's something that has been proven elsewhere. I think it makes things seem more worth trying and less offensive as just like counter ideas.
Yeah. If you're bringing it from elsewhere, I'm guessing it doesn't feel like it is as tied up to your identity as it would. Like, I had this idea that I just thought up and I want us to do this thing, which, I mean, A, is probably healthy as the person bringing the idea, but also I think makes it less threatening for the folks that you are bringing the idea to. I don't think we're saying this, but just to like put a finer point on it, I think we've both been critical of the like, don't bring me problems, bring me solutions culture, which sometimes gets thrown around as like evidence of a more healthy or forward-thinking organization.
Yeah,
empowered organization. That's not what we're like, we're not advocating for that, right?
No, we're not advocating for that.
Yeah. But it doesn't hurt to have ideas around solutions, though, is what we're saying.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't equate those things. I don't think I don't think things are ever as binary as I have a problem, someone solve it, or I have a solution, eat it. Like, I think there is a lot of nuance between those polarities. The other thing, speaking of polarities, that we talk a lot about when we do polarity mapping, particularly at the ready, is using the question, how might we? I have to be honest with you, the first time that I was facilitated in how might we, I was like, I hate this. I don't want to do that. But I got silently mad and I kept my like kind face on where I was just like, no, no, I'm listening and I will participate as a good actor in this. And then I was sort of amazed at the unlock of the how might we questions. So when you're looking at a polarity of like, here's the existing thing that's broken, let's call it our town halls are stupid and they're a huge waste of time. Here is my idea. It's to have an Ask Us Anything with the leadership team instead. Okay, so those two things might feel like they are in competition with each other, but a way to get out of that deadlock, if there is one, is to be like, okay, well, what we're trying to do is engage a large population with context that is held by a few. How might we do that? And that sort of breaks us out of oppositional viewpoints and gets us into designing for a solution together, which might have elements of a town hall, might have elements of an Ask Us Anything, might be neither of these solutions, but something else entirely. Yeah. And so I think it just helps us get into more of like a shared problem-solving space.
Yeah, and I think what that requires then is for you as the person who is trying to give feedback to the system is not being super invested in the specific solution, but the solving of the problem.
Yeah.
And bringing that energy, that posture to it. Like, yeah, I may have a first idea about how might we do this thing, but I'm very open to things that I'm not thinking about. Like, let's try to get after that together.
Totally. The one other just sort of theory point that I would make is a guy that I worked with a long time ago at MG, you know, would always say, like, anything that you see in place in an organization is there for a reason that made sense at one point. And and I think he would point to the, like, Chesterton's fence parable.
Just and about to say that.
And I think it's like, it's one that's worth reflecting on because it is so easy to just be like, tear down this fence. Why is this fence here? And it's like, well, the fence was put up for a reason at some point and it's worth understanding why before you rip it down. So go Google that and have a nice read.
Yeah. All right.
Nailed it.
Okay. I'll read the next one.
Okay.
Any thoughts on orgs moving to eliminate bureaucracy and excessive layers of management, i.e. Bayer's dynamic shared ownership in the book Humanocracy, etc.?
Etc. Question mark. Yeah. Whew. This one's tricky because some companies have just fired all of the extra layers, like higher, just got rid of them all, and that's how they solved that problem. That's probably not a solution in a lot of places.
So that fixed everything, right?
It's a surefire. I mean, it kind of did. I don't know. I think it certainly was an accelerator to the kind of transformation that they wanted to have. I have maybe kind of like a provocative answer here because I think that the structure play is not the play initially. We almost never see a bureaucratic organization with excessive layers that does not feel under pressure. Those organizations are almost always marked by feeling overextended and under-resourced. So to the extent that someone is sitting in learning and development or a leadership role or somewhere that there is some remit around job crafting, my first move would be to look at how that manager to director level is being assessed and incentivized and change it. And I would change it to being like real work. I know that's insulting. I apologize. It's Friday afternoon. But like what I want to see middle managers do rather than just judging people's work from below them and then articulating it to people above them and then taking information from people above them and telling it to people below them. What I want to see instead of that is like, I want to see managers talking to customers. I want to see managers forming really strong peer-to-peer relationships. I want to see them focusing on ways of working. I want to see them creating an environment where the people around them are doing great work. And I think if this was their strong remit and they had both like carrots and sticks to really change their orientation around their work, I just feel like it would be a huge unlock, both in terms of them not fucking up other stuff and also just creating a ton of value for the organization in this part of the company that tends to be a bit of a wasteland.
Yeah, I like that. I guess what does the, when you mentioned, I think you had mentioned incentives needing to shift to make that be a real thing. Like what might those incentives look like?
I mean, in most traditional organizations, there's literally like a competency model or a leadership model or a role description or goal setting that is tied in some way to raises and bonuses. And like I'm arguing, change that model to say, this is what we're going to pay for, instead of having what we pay for basically be knowing all the things, eliminating as much risk as possible, and keeping everyone comfortable, which is really the job that a lot of middle managers are paid to do right now. And so it's no wonder right. that that's what they do. So I'm like, change the thing that you're asking for and line up the money.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I just realized that as you were talking there, I think middle management is an insulation layer from top management a lot of the time. And to go along with that.
I called it the shit umbrella when I did that job.
Oh.
I held up the umbrella so that the shit didn't fall on the people below me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a horrible image. I appreciate that.
I feel like probably a lot of middle managers relate.
Feel that way? Yeah. I think a lot of them feel like they don't have an umbrella. They're wearing really bad raincoats.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It gets all over.
They just got a hat, a floppy. Yeah.
A barely there.
Just hat. A bucket hat that's dripping. Uh-huh. Gross.
Yeah. I don't remember what point I was going to make, so I'm going to make a slightly different
great.
One.
Okay, isn't very it fun how we do this together? And I'm so,
so
helpful.
It's so great. I think there's something around, like, I know we talk a lot about an often very valuable initial experiment to do is like the removal of stuff or like stopping things. And I'm a huge fan of like removing stuff. But I think what is sometimes missed in these like broad swath, big moment, ripping out all the bureaucracy, ripping out the middle management layers is not necessarily doing a great job of replacing that with a positive aspiration or vision of what we are doing instead. There's a lot of what you were doing before is not good, or our current system is not good. We're ripping it out and then we'll just figure it out. I mean, that's sometimes where the hand waviness around empowerment comes.
Yeah.
And I think we have seen over and over that I guess maybe given a long enough period of time and enough kind of space to figure it out, people will. But that's generally not the case in organizations. There's like shit going on. There's stuff you got to do. There's like quarterly earnings to report and products to sell and customers to make happy. So there's something around creating positive momentum around the thing that we actually want as well, not just taking out the stuff we don't.
Agreed. I wrote about this in an article recently. I have really stopped with the start by stopping thing to your exact point. And I've become much more alchemical in my take on this, which is like start by replacing because no one holds space ever because they stop. They never actually use like the time they get back or the energy they get back or the money. They just fill it back up because humans. And so I'm very supportive of what you just said, which is like, at least have a first thing if you're going to make a significant change that you're swapping.
Start by swapping. It really rolls off the tongue. The other thing that I will say though, is that don't use the excuse of we have to figure out our vision to wait to get started.
Fair.
Because I think there is a lot of anti-pattern around we have to articulate exactly where we are going before we can start that gets in the way of actually starting and then steering along the way. I think generally there is it's not hard to broadly define what better would look like for this organization. And then we can figure out the details as we get going.
Totes. All right. Do we do it?
All right. Good enough for me.
I'm turning it green.
Good enough for Friday work.
Good enough for the afternoon before your vacation. Sam Spraylin, tell me, I can't help it. It's so funny. Tell me, if you would, about a workplace project you thought would be easy to fix and turned out to be hard, and one you thought would be hard to fix but turned out to be easy. What factors influenced these unexpected outcomes?
I hope you have a better answer than I do. I feel like mine is a cop-out, and maybe I will stumble my way into a better one. Okay. But as I was sitting here, you know, 20 minutes before we started recording, as I'm thinking about what I might say for each of these, I tried to come up with an example of something that I thought was going to be easy that turned out to be hard, and something that turned out that was hard that ended up being easy, and realized that I don't know that there are easy problems in organizations. I might just be a bad consultant, Rodney. We should maybe talk about it. Maybe I'm just not very good at this work. but early on, I feel like I stepped into lots of things where I was like, oh, it's obvious, like, what is going on here? Like, why don't you just do this thing?
Just.
And to our first question about things that seemingly exist for no reason actually probably do exist for a reason, or they are really enmeshed in lots of other things that we can't touch for various good reasons.
Right.
Almost nothing that seems simple is actually that way, especially for external folks, because if it truly was simple, they would have solved it.
They would have fixed it.
Our clients would have solved it. They wouldn't have hired us to do it, right? So there may be, if you are internal to a large organization, maybe there actually are some like easy things that look hard that you could actually do. They're just generally get solved before we're in the weeds with you all. But I want to hear your answer, because I feel like you probably have actual answers that we can riff on.
I do have actual answers.
Great.
Okay.
Great. You're so better at this work than I am.
So, well, I mean, I've been doing it longer.
We already knew that.
I actually have this experience with this particular type of work a lot. A lot of times when I am starting with a client and we are starting with something around strategy, and the leadership for the first time ever wants to really have like a shared something, like a shared essential intent or shared goals for the year or shared something. I often, in talking to the various leaders about what they're up to, have the felt sense of like, oh boy, we are never going to be able to get to something shared.
Yeah.
And I multiple times have had the experience of it actually being quite easy for them to articulate a higher order thing that they collectively are aiming for. And I think part of that is because I'm working at the top of the house and it's a bunch of really smart people. And part of it is because when given the container of like, right, each of you know what you're trying to do in your vertical, but what are like you trying to do? I have often found it is easier for them to figure that out than I think it's going to be.
Yeah.
But then comes the flip of that, which is then I think that their shared work to do that will be easy. And that is not easy at all. Yeah. Then it just completely goes sideways when I go, okay, cool. So what are your shared like outcomes and projects? And they're all like, what now?
What?
Yeah. No, no.
Wait, what?
We did like what? We did it
together. What?
We're done now. We'll see you later. So that's one area where I've been surprised. In one client in particular where I was like, oh boy, this is going to take forever. It was like a day. It was the first time they had ever created any kind of shared goals at a very, very senior level of a humongous organization. They just fucking nailed it. And then they were like, peace, we're going out to drinks. And it was amazing. And then they did a terrible job trying to get to shared projects.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And in a slight attempt at a redemption arc for myself.
Just to bump the metrics a little bit.
Well, I would, in that example, I would have lumped those two things together and been like, oh, like this is the type of thing I'm talking about. Like, because that second part was so hard and I've been in similar situations where they didn't actually do anything, I kind of just like wrote off the whole thing, because who the fuck cares if you've written down your strategy and your essential intent and your shared outcomes if you can't actually do something with that? I completely agree. I have been in that same.
And I cared. Because at least then we had something we were aiming for. And even though then the more detailed part of it was a real slog, they had a reason to slog it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they stick with it and actually are able to do that work, then great. But I have seen situations where like that slog kind of gets just, I mean, either the project ends, like we run out of time, and it just kind of like trickles away.
Yeah.
But I mean, the high of that coming out of that first session, though, is nothing better, right?
High fives.
Yeah, high fives galore.
Conversely, the thing that, this is a non-answer to the question. And
good. Join me. Join me in non-answerdom.
Join me in doing a bad job at being a podcast host.
Just
PSA, this is not directed at any of my current clients. I am not talking about you. I know you listen to this and you think I am, but I'm not.
I feel like we need to put that disclaimer at the front of every episode.
But sometimes maybe. I am talking about them, but this time I'm really not talking about them.
Okay.
I have had two different situations where, as part of an existing client project, I was invited or asked or pulled upon to help HR teams. And I knew some of the members of the HR team, and I was like, this is going to be so fun because these people love ways of working stuff, and like they call themselves org designers. This is going to be dope. And in both cases, they were so mean. Like, they were so mean to me that I was like, why did you ask me here? Like, obviously, you do not want my help, and also, you hate me. So, like, why am I in this fucking room in this hotel locked in here with you people who want to Hunger Games me? It's wild. That has happened more than once where it's like the lead up to it is like, this is going to be so great because AHR never gets this kind of attention and we've seen what you're doing with the business and it's so exciting to us and we can't wait to dig into it for ourselves. And then like after the check-in round, they're just basically like, you suck. We hate this. We know what we're doing. Shut up. And I'm like, oh my God, I did not ask to be here. Like, you guys invited me. This is your party that you invited me to. Why are you so mad? Yeah. So that's been a surprise. Again, this does not pertain to people who have hired us specifically to do future of HR work with them. You all are lovely and it's going swimmingly. This is in other cases where I got pulled and was surprised then that what I was being pulled into was a pond full of piranhas.
Yeah. And frankly, I think this might just be a Rodney problem. just saying.
Sam, how dare you? Wait, do you? Why? Kidding. Why do you think they hated me, no, Sam? I'm just messing
with you, Rodney.
I brought one of them cookies.
I've been known to try to bribe clients with cookies before.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I'm like, that's the biggest
downfall.
How about cookies?
Of not doing as much in-person stuff as we used to. I know. I used to have like a reputation of like bringing cookies and stuff.
I bet. I mean, you do make the most delicious chocolate chip cookies I've ever had in my whole life.
That's true.
They're perfect. That's true. They're perfect. Thank you. And I know because I love chocolate chip cookies so much.
Nice. That's the nicest thing you've literally ever said to me.
That's not true, Sam. I say nice stuff to you all the time. Don't believe him, listeners. I'm very kind to
another
him.
Another question?
I'm going to ask it to you.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
I believe there are a lot of people who wish our organizations would consider working with someone like you, but don't know where to start. Oh, thank you. That's nice. I didn't put this in here for PR. I only read this part of this question. What have you seen work as a starting point? What are the necessary ingredients and how do you assess readiness before getting started?
So I'm going to start on this question, like super logistically. So what are the necessary ingredients or what is a starting point? A starting point is often getting a group of people around a table for 90 minutes to really unpack what is going on in their organization. When we do this with folks, we do the tiniest bit of priming around some of our key ideas, like the operating system, so that we then have a new lens to look at the thing that they are looking for partnership in. And with that lens, we can look at it in different ways and start to like really understand what is going on maybe at a layer below the surface, which is where I think we do our best work. And I think right from the get-go, it lets people feel heard in terms of like what they're actually trying to solve. And it's them talking to each other and us asking smart questions to get a one layer deeper.
That's cool. Yeah, I was going to give an answer that's very similar, which is whether you do it yourself or you do it with a partner like us or someone else, have a real experience of working differently and see how it goes. So it's like, if you're someone who doesn't have a lot of authority to change how work is getting done, like to Sam's point, you can use the OS canvas just to do a session with your team, or you can grab a liberating structure from their website just to try with their team, or you can do one of the 9,000 practices we've talked on this podcast just to do with your team. And I think there can be a lot of value both in terms of starting to create momentum and assessing readiness in just doing something different and seeing how it goes and seeing if people are like, oh, that actually did feel like we got a lot more done in an hour looking at our operating system than just talking about a problem. Or it feels like we really learned a lot more spending 45 minutes retrospecting than we usually do when we just talk about what we might do in the future for that 45 minutes. So like, try to have a contrasting experience in wherever your locus of control is. And then importantly, ask the group to reflect on that contrasting experience and be like, did we like that? Would we like more of a thing that feels different than business as usual?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And when I think about necessary ingredients, I guess if what you just said or what I just said there sounds like it would be impossible to make happen, like the idea of getting your team together to do something, that is even mildly kind of different, like as business as usual, then you probably don't quite have the necessary ingredients yet. And there's probably some foundation level hearts and minds to start winning over to even the idea that we do have some control over our experience and we can change that over time, which that's probably like some of the base level stuff, ingredients that you need before you bake this pie.
Other sort of behavioral ingredients, I've been thinking about this a lot recently. Whoever is going to sponsor or lead or like hold enough space to do something different, this is not a well fully baked thought, but I feel like there are a couple of things that I know to be anti-patterns here. One is if you find that that individual, or if you are that individual, has a very difficult time getting specific or getting clear about what is not working, what they want, about anything. Like there's a lot of vagueness in big companies especially, and vagueness is a protective shield against being wrong. But if you have someone who is addicted to vagueness, it's going to be very hard to do any of the kinds of work that we do because it's all about creating real clarity. And so a lot of times if I'm in an early conversation with a leader and they feel really slippery to me and like they can't be pinned down and that I can't fully understand what they're talking about, I'm like, this is not going to go well. And then the other thing is, and this is based on a very recent experience that is not a work experience, If the person who is going to sort of sponsor or hold space to try something different is just very impatient, it's a real counterindicator. Like the benefits of working in new ways just are not immediate. And if you have someone who expects to see measurable, obvious results inside of like a meeting or a day or a month, that ain't it. Yeah. Like you've just got to find somebody that understands that learning takes some time and that they're ready to like ride those waves. Is there anything else you want to say about like the gnarly problem bit?
Well, I was going to make one comment on the impatience thing, which I loved what you said there. So the fun thing about the impatience is I completely agree about impatience about outcomes being a anti-pattern to this work. But I love a little bit of impatience with like the slowness of business as usual. Like I love a partner that's like, can we meet like next week early? Like when's the next time? Like how do we keep the work going? And that's like impatience around a lack of momentum as opposed to impatience around, are we done yet?
Yes, totally. That is such a good point. I love having clients that are like, when can we do this? Can we do this tomorrow? Can we keep going? Versus like, why isn't it working yet? Why isn't it working tomorrow? Those are two very different dispositions. And you're right. There's nothing better than a client who's like, I'm going to make space for this because I really want to see it happen.
Cool. I don't think I have anything else on that one.
Okay.
Read the last one here.
Yeah.
All right, Rodney, last question. Do you have plans for an episode on the disconnect between senior leaders and where work happens? It's like two very different conversations in those circles. The bottom is tired of talking because it's not heard or making a difference. The top is making the best decisions they have and setting ambitious, noble goals, but not seeing or hearing about the real barriers to progress. We can't be the only ones in the middle who see this disconnect.
Yes. So the short answer is yes, we do have plans for probably multiple episodes about this because it's something that I've been working on for several months. And really what I'm finding in complex organizations is there is not an understanding of the difference between what is visible and what is invisible in the organization. And I think that's the point you're making. It's that what is visible to leaders, particularly senior leaders, is usually like lagging indicators or like the measurements or the assets or the explicit elements of work, which has very little to do with how those things get made, how they get executed, where work gets done, or ways of working. And then in the sort of ways of working corpus, what we know is that those ways of working relate very directly to individual experience and how individuals react. And so what is going to be coming to you very soon is sort of a large scale orientation to this that is really created with the intention of helping people understand that you need to be doing just enough at every altitude to keep an organization operating well. And by every altitude, I mean you need to be doing just enough sensing of the environment. You need to be doing just enough steering at that surface level. You need to be doing just enough evolution of your ways of working. And you need to be doing just enough supporting for individual experience to keep it all evolving, because at any of those depths, things can go sideways.
Shit, yo, I'm excited for that. I have not been working on this with you all. I'm about to like just pull up a chair and go to school.
It's very cool. And so the work that you're going to be seeing coming from the Ready in the coming months is explaining what this means in terms of how organizations create loops between the external environment, their strategy, their operations, and human experience. And we are very excited about it.
I don't have a better answer than that, because I feel like that was the teaser that we wanted to lay down for whenever this arc is going to be coming. Which do we have a time frame on it, Rodney? The future?
Let's say summer. Coming
Let's
to
say
you,
summer.
Summer 24.
Like every
but
big
you might
blockbuster.
Start seeing some stuff trickling out from us sooner than that.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Sam, right. Have we done it? Have we A-S day?
We answered some A's. Some cues. We have answered some cues.
Some cues.
We did A some cues.
I don't know why closing that round. Sounds like a bad, like curses. We yeah, ate some cues. Yeah, it sounds bad. You want to close us up?
Let's just go. Let's just go. Let's just stick with the classic for now, which is, what is one thing that you noticed about today's session?
I noticed that the questions that we get now compared to the questions that we got in the early days of Brave New Work are much more informed by the work that we actually do in the world. So whereas I feel like questions used to be much more theoretical or very, very broad, like, you know, how does new ways of working fix our broken democracy? Now it feels like a lot of the people who ask us these questions, like, it feels like they're quite dialed in, actually, to, like, principles and practices. And they're just, like, putting real fine points on stuff, which is exciting. And it's really fun to answer.
Yeah. Kind of continuing on that path for me, noticed something similar. And I noticed in myself initially as I read these questions and tried to get my thoughts in order, I felt like embarrassed that I was having a hard time giving succinct, clear, good answers. And I'm realizing that anybody who has been listening to this podcast long enough to be sending us questions and asking such high level questions very much understands that almost no organizational question has a obvious, distinct, clear answer. And that these are platforms for conversations to better understand problems than they are so much, you know, providing answers.
Totally. I love that. We got real smart listeners.
That's right. All right. We're always looking for new topics for the show. So if you have an organizational pattern that you're having trouble changing, shoot us a note at podcast@theready.com. And yes, we did just do an AUA episode, but we're going to do another one. So we need more questions. So bring them on.
Or it might be such a gnarly pattern that it's an entire ep. That's happened,
That's true.
I think, hasn't it? Probably.
It sure
or
has.
It will. It will if it hasn't. This
right.
show is engineered by Taylor Marvin and produced by one of my favorite people on this earth, Jack Van Amberg. At Work
He's
with the Ready. At Work with the Ready is created by the Ready, where we help organizations around the world change the way they work. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Mm-hmm.